tears on my pillow. They won't try on their own.
Everybody ready for a meeting? Right. Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. Let's have Kat up to do our joke.
Hello, Kat Alcoholic. Okay. A drunk walks into the bar, sits down, and demands a drink. "Get out," the bartender says. "I don't serve drunks here." The drunk staggers out the door, only to come back through the side door. He sits at the bar and demands another drink. "Again, I told you, get out. I don't serve drunks here." So he stumbles out. Once again, he sits to the bar, loudly coming in, asking for a drink. The bartender, now glowing mad, looks at the drunk and yells, "I told you, no drunks allowed here. Now get out." The drunk looks at the bartender and stares, "How many bars do you work at?"
Right. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Amber. Hi. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation. So please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise and might and will distract others. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away. And ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everybody ready? Let's start.
Misericordia,
lead in the fog light prayer. It's on either side of me if you don't know it. God. There is a solution from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Mike T. to read Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of this 12 of the 12 steps is to have one. So it's kind of important to know what one is.
Hi everybody, I'm Michael and I am an alcoholic. Spiritual experience. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it is not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of this, of the difference, long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of a spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most empathetically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not, can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information which is proof against all arguments and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer, Alcoholics Anonymous.
All right, please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane meeting mode, or you can just turn them off. Okay, and I'd like to introduce our speaker, Peter M., session 5.
Okay. My name is Peter. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober and part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And again, thank the group for having me. I won't be here next week. Just get that out of the way. I have a trip to do. You have a guy, Danny D, who's coming in from Stewart. He'll do a great job next week, and I'll be back in 2 weeks. Group has been kind enough to invite me back here often to do these 12-step series, and it's a treat to be here. It looks great in here. I always say it looks like a mini conference. Everyone's at attention for these meetings. It seems to be no nonsense. It's a great core membership. And one of the things I really appreciate is the women here. The Big Book is in here. We got a big... If there's a woman looking for a sponsor in the Big Book, they come to Alcoholics and God, because we usually have about 10 of them here who are just kicking some butt. And as a member of this fellowship, it's actually refreshing to see. A lot of ladies here walking with grace and dignity with a Big Book under their arm looking for a new one. And they always are working with others. So I thank you guys for doing that and keeping this fellowship safe for the ladies to come in here, and the men for protecting the women in here. It means a lot to an old guy like me, because I don't have much fight in me anymore. June 23rd, 1988 was my separation from alcohol, and I'm here tonight as a recovered alcoholic. And I say that because I am, because God in His infinite mercy, which is what one of the things we get to learn and experience in Alcoholics Anonymous, is mercy. And when we talk about step five somewhere in this talk, when you're hearing a fifth step, you're sitting in the mercy seat, and we're not casting judgment on what we're hearing from that person. But God in His infinite mercy separated me from alcohol after... six treatment centers, put me in my seventh treatment center, and I get to talk to you about that. It took me a whole bunch of time and a whole bunch of rehabs and a whole bunch of bottoming out to the point I got to on June 23rd, 1988, where finally desperation screamed louder than my ego for the very first time. And prior to that, my ego always took control and dragged me in the direction it wanted to go. And what I need to be very mindful is, with, you know, 30 years sober, my ego didn't go anywhere. It goes dormant on some days, but it's always looking to whisper and convince me to do things that may not be spiritual, or think things that are not spiritual, and it starts to erode all the work that's been done. So my job is to sit with the sponsor or a very close support group or both and acknowledge what's going on inside of me. Is the only way it can heal, by acknowledging what's going on, because what I don't acknowledge will destroy me. What I bring forth, I will get healed from. What I don't bring forth will destroy me. And so one of the things we need to do in Alcoholics Anonymous is be transparent, not with the whole room perhaps, because when we tell a story, we say in a general way what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. But when I get with the sponsor, I need to ante up, cards facing up, not cards facing down. And if I'm sitting here tonight and I'm around a little while, when it talks about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, if what happened looks like what it's like now, if back then looks like now, then nothing has happened, you know? I tell you in a general way what it was like, all my ripping up, all the treatment centers, all the consequences, and all my unspiritual behavior. And if I'm telling you that looks the same way now, or you see that in me, then nothing has happened in the middle. I've experienced nothing but gained a lot of knowledge and went to a whole bunch of meetings, and I got a head full of AA and a spirit that's still disconnected from me in a sense. And if I always do what I always did, I'm always going to get what I always got. And one of the things I'm so grateful to my alcoholism for, and to my bottom for, because it positioned me, brought me to a place of reasonableness, what our book, Big Book, talks about. You can't talk to someone who's not reasonable. They're not listening. They're adamant about their way is the right way. But you can talk to someone, you can negotiate with someone who's reasonable, who's listening. When we look at the world out there, no one's reasonable right now. This side is right and they're wrong, and this side's right and you're wrong, and we're going nowhere fast. But one thing about alcohol and alcoholism, it beat me into a place of reasonableness where the people who I weren't listening to for years, suddenly I was looking for them to give me something to get out of the mess I'm in. That's called any lens. And because of my alcoholism and the bottom I hit, luckily survived it, it still has me paddling, seeking out this God, and trying to be of service to others. I do none of this perfect, by the way, but chopping wood and carrying water to get in God's light and to stay there and to grow in understanding and effectiveness. That's not going to happen for a guy like me by just attending AA meetings, the sacred meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, the sacred fellowship, because I've learned and have watched that meeting makers get drunk and meeting makers die, and meetings are not going to treat this thing that I suffer from called alcoholism. It's a band-aid on an open wound. I need to be here. I get to be here. I love the fellowship. Being around this, traveling for a meeting, sitting in the back and just taking it all in, the handshakes and the hugs and the how we use and all, it's wonderful. And going to a diner after, all that fellowship is wonderful. It was a band-aid on an open wound, but I need to go home after the meeting's over. I need to go to work the next day if I have a job. I need to mingle with other people. Maybe I need to raise children. Maybe I'm in a relationship. Maybe I shouldn't be getting into a relationship. And so I need some spiritual muscles, a new GPS to do this. And what the ego wants to do is think for me, say, Pete, you're doing this right. Don't worry about it. And I'm accountable to only me. And my assessment, my self-assessment is done by me. This is very dangerous. It was an old-timer, Garrett, from Deerfield Beach. When a new guy would say, I'm doing great, he would say, you want a second opinion? You know? And this is nothing against a newcomer. I don't want this to come out sideways. But if you're new, like I was at one time, you're not doing as good as you think you are. Because we're faced with a mountain. It's called alcoholism, and we pulled out a few rocks. And so we got to chop wood and carry water and submit to a disciplined life, a spiritual life, submit to a sponsor, submit to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I speak for myself, I'm not going to do that. I am not going to do that, drunk or sober, unless I've been leveled and been made teachable. Because I will recoil, I will push back, I will negotiate, I will try to get some wiggle room and fix it for me. And what needs to be changed is me. You don't need to change. I need to change to fit in here. I need to change to fit in Alcoholics Anonymous. I need to fit to be of maximum service to others. It's not about you changing for me. I remember this young fella says, hey, man, it's like 2016. The big book's got to be changed. There's new people in here. And I said, that's a great argument, but that means we'll go to the Vatican and tell them, change the Bible because it's 2016. And I had to share with him that spiritual laws work. That's why they're not changed. My job is to fit myself in this book, find myself in this book, and do what takes place. And up until the time I didn't do that, I kept getting drunk. And the trapdoors have trapdoors. It took me many years to concede to my innermost self what I was. I mean, I would be in treatment saying I'm an alcoholic, and I didn't believe that. That's what everyone else said. And in 1988, I was sitting in a treatment center. They were going around the room, and what came out of my mouth was, I'm an alcoholic, and it came from a different place. That voice came from a very deep place, not a dark place saying I'm alcoholic. It was actually a very bright place. It was truth. Because I never forget when I said it. There was about 30 guys in the room, and I says, I'm an alcoholic. And when I said it, it was a plea to people, please help me. I'm an alcoholic, and it sounded like I'm dying. I could have said that. I knew what I was. Deep down in my soul, I am an alcoholic, and I know what that looks like now. That I can have one drink, but I can't stop after one drink. And I want to stay away from the first drink, but I always pick up the first drink sober. I never pick up the first drink drunk. There's my problem. Because even when I'm away from a drink, my mind's telling me we can have one more. We can do a little bit of this. We can go on marijuana maintenance. We can eat a couple of pills if I'm not doing opiates. I have to do opiates. I have a couple of drinks. And a couple of drinks I'm doing is dance, this alcoholic dance. And I always wind up in the same place, next to dead. So in 1988, God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. I was surrendered. For years, I would say, I surrendered, and that was just my being naive. I was actually surrendered, like most of us are surrendered by God's mercy. We're taken from that scrap heap to a level of life better than the best we've known. And still, with 30 years, Big Book says, the best years of my life lie ahead of me. Some of that's emotional sobriety, growing and understanding and effectiveness, and the depth at which I see my alcoholism lives, I've never seen before. and how great this God is, and I get to experience I've never seen before or experienced before. So there's this onward journey that I'm chopping wood and carrying water, and I get into Alcoholics Anonymous. I had to learn again what I suffer from as an alcoholic. What does that mean? That I have this threefold illness. A lot of things have happened to me as a young boy. You know, a lot of verbal abuse, some sexual abuse, some physical abuse. You know, just a lot of things. A very unsteady home with an alcoholic mom who committed suicide when I'm 14. A guy called Dad was bigger than this room when I was a kid. He was 20 feet tall. No relationship at all. So I was trying to navigate through this thing, and no one said, here's the handbook, go do life. Just figure it out on your own, like many of us had that. And you just try to figure it out, and I keep running into myself. Jesus says, love your enemies. And I thought I had to love people who hated me until I found out the real enemy was looking back at me in the mirror. That's the biggest adversary I'm ever going to face. And that adversary specifically lies right up in here. It's the mind. You ever notice you can't MRI the mind? You can't X-ray the mind? You can do that with the brain. It's an organ. But the mind's like this ghost, this entity, and yet it has tremendous power over me, has tremendous power over so many people. It does my thinking for me, it does my seeing for me, it does my speaking for me, it does my hearing for me, and I navigate around this thing. And the very thing that creates the problem, the mind, is not where I go to solve the problem, but I'm in, my default button is I'll figure it out. I never figure anything out. I just know how to figure out to get drunk and do a lot of ugly things. So I have this threefold illness, and going to meetings is not going to treat that. I might get a reprieve for about an hour, if I'm lucky, and get drunk on the way home. Or maybe I get drunk on the way to the meeting. Or I find an excuse not to make the meeting. Or the speaker's too serious. Or they didn't cover the topic. I will punch holes in anything not to be here, because the ego don't want to be here. And then I got desperate enough where I needed to be here, and I wanted to be, and I love being here. And after getting leveled in 43 pages plus doctor's opinion, which is approximately about 53 pages thereabout, over and over and over again, my big book tells me exactly what I'm up against that no treatment center ever told me. My treatment centers told me deal with my feelings, my issues, and my triggers, and how to process my feelings. They meant well. They work hard. But they spoke a language that didn't speak to me and how to recover from alcoholism. So I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. They said, you have a mind problem, you have a body problem, you have a disconnection from God. And until the disconnection gets connected, you will continue to have a mind and body problem. And when they talked about God, you know, I would say, uh-oh, here we go. We're going to join a cult. I knew it was going to get religious. I knew the road was going to narrow. And it didn't have to be religious. If it is, great. Somewhere in the last 5 years, I would say, that the spiritual walk and the religious walk for me has met. In God's way, in God's time. And my life has kind of opened up. On, you know, it's interesting. This very narrow road in which I'm asked to walk and pass through a very narrow gate. Somehow in that very narrowing of my life, my whole world has opened up. It makes no sense. But left to my own devices, I don't do well. And after getting leveled after 43 pages plus doctor's opinion, I said, now what do I do? And they painted me into a corner. And Big Book says, the more hopeless we feel, the better. And I love when I'm working with a real new guy. And you break it down some more. And his chin hits the floor. And he says, like, I'm screwed. I says, exactly, now you're getting it. Because she ain't going to fix you. And that job ain't going to fix. I know you're making money. That's not going to keep you sober. That's going to be a nice little run you're saving up for. In fact, you're better off with no girlfriend and no money and no job and maybe some halfway house to live in where you got to take public transportation for the next 6 months because there's no distractions. You're focused on one thing, meeting, Big Book, steps, God. I mean, that's how it was for me. I was so broke that there was an 18-year-old kid in my halfway house. I'll never forget, his name was Brad, 18-year-old kid. I said, what are you doing? He's like, the Boy Scouts? This is like treatment. What are you doing here? And I had no sliced bread. I had no butter. I had no soft drinks. and tail between my legs, I went to an 18-year-old kid. I'm 28 at the time, 29. Brad, can I borrow some of your sliced bread and peanut butter and butter to make toast? I said, yeah, of course. I'm dying 1,000 debts, Mr. Big Shot. I had to borrow sliced bread and butter because my family was not sending any money from home. I was in there on a scholarship. And what Brad did for me was left some cold cuts in a refrigerator and in a plastic bag, Peter, he put on it. I had an 18-year-old kid feeding me in a halfway house. You know what I did? I went to meetings. And I found a meeting through someone called the Three Legacies meeting that lit me up. I didn't look back. No distractions. So we live life forward and understand that backwards, sometimes the difficulty we're having or the struggle we're having or what we call the hard times are actually wonderful things. It's God just removing anything. And I think God just sent me the trials of Job because I look at painful things as bad. And sometimes those painful things are actually removal, that God's showing me his love by removing stuff. It feels bad. It feels uncomfortable. It feels painful. It's God uprooting me and putting me here, and I kind of don't like it. I want to go back to doing what I always did. But after getting level, going into my 7 treatment center, I was willing to take on anything. I remember the one night I was praying, and I hit my knees to do a night. They said, how come you're not praying at night? I said, okay, I'll pray at night. And I hit my knees to pray at night, and I was waiting for God to come out of heaven and say, you have some nerve coming to me twice in one day. I'll deal with you in the morning, but again? And I will tell you, over the last 30 years, the more I pray, the more at peace I'm in. And I have a very busy life, and I get upset by certain things. I experience fear with certain things. I get upset by betrayal and hypocrisy. I have a very low tolerance for that stuff. But I will tell you, the more I pray, the more I'm able to be at ease with life. And as the carpenter said, wear the world like a loose garment. I kind of know what he means by that now. There were things that would really tighten me up when I was a year or 2 years sober. I don't even pay attention to them anymore. That's not on me. That's God. Step 2 is my pointer to the solution, which was the way out of this thing. And any conception of God I came up with was sufficient to make the approach. My big book blows this wide open. It's not a religious organization, a GOD, group of drunks for good old direction, whatever works as long as it's not me. And when we get to step 3, I think I talked about this last week, that you get, when I was new, we get a youngin' coming in and they okay, I'm going to do my third step and turn my will and life over the care of God. How do we know they're really sincere about turning it over? Do they know the depths of what we're asking to do, that my life, their life, is none of their business in any way at all? They probably don't, because I didn't. But what we look at is their willingness to do that, make that move, and then follow the rest of the directions in 4. Because my way of carrying out this decision is by taking action. Like, I want to get in shape. I'm going to join a gym. Then I go to the gym, and when I get there, I work out. So this AA for me has always been the spiritual gym. Well, we'll spend hours on the beach getting a right tan, and we'll spend weeks upon weeks getting all, you know, buffed out and to walk into a meeting and look like Hercules when we get here, you know. And last week we were talking about CrossFit. There's more guys injured because of CrossFit, but they got to look good, you know. And the guys come in with shirts 6 sizes too small, and they walk around like this. How you doing? But I'm spiritual, you know. What's her name? Imagine if I spent just as much time in that other stuff as I did with God. What a monster I'd be. What a warrior. How much time I spend communing with God, and how much time I spend doing stuff. And what's interesting for me as an alcoholic, how things are so like upside down and my perceptions and conceptions about life are so sideways that I have a life-threatening illness. I have a terminal disease. It's called alcoholism. And God forbid any other terminal disease, you would drop everything and address it so you can live, because you know you're going to die if you don't do these things. I've had many friends in AA who were hit with the big C word and would do anything to be free of this disease that was about to kill them. And some of them didn't make it. And then we have alcoholism, which is a terminal illness. It's going to kill me. Progressively, it will kill me. It will take me back to a drink. And I take my time with it. Do 90 meetings in 90 days and wait, don't leave till the miracle happens. I do a lot of hanging around in AA. And life gets busy and life becomes my master when I'm supposed to be serving God, and I'm a slave to life. I'm a slave to the world. I'm a slave to fashion. I'm a slave to what I drive. I'm a slave to my job. I'm a slave to my money. And where's God in that? How can I worship two masters? We can't. I like nice things. I like to have stuff. But God's first, fidelity to God. No other gods before that God. Because God brought me into this to go work for him. I need to be a good employer here because people's lives are at stake. He gave, just think about this, he gave us this task, 10 days, 20 days, 6 months, 20 years, to go take care of his kids. He's saying, here's one of my kids, they're lost, go fix them. I'll back you, I'll give you the words, I'll give you the endurance, I'll give you the strength, the courage, strength, and direction. I'm going to feed you, go do it. And we go to the movies instead. Or we turn them over to someone else. So my third step was about turning my will and life over to the care of God as I currently understand them. And how I looked at God then and how I am now is two different relationships. Same God, different relationship. New conceptions, more experiences. And thank God for God. I remember the first time I did a third step prayer, I got up off my knees with my sponsor and he handed me instructions for step 4 and we began. You know. I went back through my life, and nothing counts, my big book says, but thoroughness and honesty. It's not about writing a thesis. It's about putting it out on paper. I'd have a fifth step to where my sponsor is going to tweak it if I missed anything. And I got to look at my stuff. With the great thing about step 4 that we may not see, I know I didn't see it the first time around, is I'm writing, pardon me, a person's name in the resentment column and the causes to why I'm so angry with them for what they did to me. And then I have a third and fourth column. Talk about the 7 areas of self that hurt, interfered, or threatened, and where am I fault? My mistakes. But I have Joe cause, and he did this to me, and he did this to me, and I have venom for Joe. Then I get to step 8, and I'm praying to make amends to Joe, regardless of what he did for me. And step 9, I'm knocking on his door, regardless of what he did for me. I'm taking a look at how I harmed him. And the very same guy back in step 4, who I despised, I'm going with hat in hand and asking for forgiveness. And I want to make it right. I want to fix it. Talk about a spiritual transformation. And how God will give us the words. Don't worry about the words you have to speak. He will give them to us. And if they kick us out, we dust off our sandals and go on to the next one. But we're doing it. We're in the game. It blows my mind because there were many people I went to in step 9. On step 4, I says, I hate this person. And I can feel it while I'm writing. In step 9, I'm knocking on the door and saying, I need to make amends to you. I'm going to ask for your forgiveness with hat in hand. It's incredible. Step 4, when we talk about step 4, we have resentment column, we have the cause column, we have affects my column, we have the where of fourth column. And the more and more I learned about step 4 and experienced step 4, here's what my experience has been. We need to write all of that stuff, but when we look at it, the first 3 columns are all based on a lie. They really happen to us based on our perceptions and conceptions, but they're an absolute lie. And because of that, I act out a certain way or see things a certain way in column 4. If I'm spiritually fit, those people aren't on my list. It's all based on my being sound asleep. We have to disregard what the other person did entirely, my book says. So Joe did bad things to me, slandered me, threw me under a bus, ripped me off, whatever it might be. My book says disregard him entirely. Perhaps they were spiritually sick, it says. I had to think about that when I'm writing inventory. Unless someone has some severe mental problems, is it possible that these people did bad things to me because they were, we'll call it, spiritually disconnected, sound asleep spiritually? That this is what you do? You harm other people, you gossip about other people, you hurt people, you backstab people. It's very possible, because when I looked at the harms caused to others, when I'm spiritually sound asleep, when I was drinking and drugging, I did those very things to other people, and I wanted absolution in a minute. I wanted redemption. I wanted forgiveness. Please let me off the hook. I didn't know what I was doing. Neither did they. Something in Scripture talks just about that. How me going out and talking about God, there's going to be people who are going to have sharp tongues and throw nets out to tangle me up and do things to hurt me and gossip and slander and all these other things. And the Scripture is telling me, just be mindful of these things when you're walking with God's Word. And then I had to think about it. I did the very same thing to people outwardly and inwardly with my mind. So when I'm looking at this inventory, or I'm going to go make amends, I need to remember that people do things the way they do things when we're spiritually sick or sound asleep, and it brings me into a place of forgiveness. Case in point, growing up, my dad was very, very, very tough on me. Very, very difficult with me. Really difficult. And I hated him for it most of my young life. I was jealous of him. I despised him at times. I wanted to scream, I'm your son, please have mercy on me. My God, why are you doing this to me? And then I went through inventory. And about the third or fourth time through inventory, I saw things completely different. My dad never even went to high school. My dad was brought up in the streets of South Brooklyn around very, very tough street men. He marries a woman who's got an alcohol and pill problem, commits suicide when she's like 32. My dad was 30 years old and he's stuck with three kids. I would not be pleasant either if I was in his shoes. He was not a church guy. He was not a praying guy. He was not a therapy guy. He didn't have AA because he's not an alcoholic. He was left with the world on his back. People react funny that way. And suddenly I had tremendous mercy for him. Is exactly what the book's supposed to be doing to us. How we will have goodwill toward people who harmed us. That means the heart is opening up. Haven't I harmed other people? Haven't we harmed other people on our way into Alcoholics Anonymous? And yet we want mercy, and the people have harmed us. We have no mercy for them. Don't I go to God, please forgive me, but I won't forgive my brother and sister. And so I write out this inventory, and rubber hit the road for me when I did the fourth column, and I did fear and sex inventory. I've probably done over 30 years, I don't know, maybe 30 inventories, four steps, a bunch of them. Shared it with the sponsor in five, had a new experience in six, seven, eight, and nine. Sometimes there was some amends to make. Sometimes there was a lot of amends to make. My grand sponsor told me one time, he says, kid, one day you're going to get to the amends list and have maybe one or two, maybe none. Don't be alarmed. It means you're getting better. Now, the next time you go through the work, you might have a couple more. But the list should be getting smaller, not increasing over time, if I'm really on this walk. And my amends list, I'm getting way ahead of myself, but my amends list the first time through the work was I stole, I cheated, I lied, physically abused people. It went like that. And the last inventory was, I'm sorry I didn't make it to dinner. When I said I can be there, I apologize. See how that changed? I miss my mass on a couple of Sundays as I go to confession. I didn't make enough time for that sponsee, so I make amends. It's changed drastically. And we get to step five with this, my life, on a bunch of paper. My stuff. Not good and bad. Doesn't mean I'm good. Doesn't mean I'm bad. It's just the stuff. The obstacles that are blocking me from God. If I want to find out what God is, I need to find out what God is not first, and the inventory will do that. I get a glimpse of what God has made rather than I've been trying to create for the longest time. I've been walking around with in AA and out there my whole life with the case of mistaken identity. I had an idea of who I'm supposed to be, where I'm supposed to live, what my whole life's supposed to be about, who I am, what I represent, basically nothing. And I would stick to who I am in my mind, what I'm supposed to be doing with my life, my purpose in life, all these false identities I would take in to give me some sort of sense of self. All delusion, all masks. And until the masks is taken off, I'm going to continue to live in delusion. And 4 and 5, he's going to rip the mask off and it's not going to be pleasant. And I find out who I am by finding out who I've never been. Always trying to be. The less of me, the more of God I will have. And the more of me that I'm holding on to, there's not much room for God because I'm still running the show. I had to be in a place of willing to be changed drastically, a complete revolution, fundamentally changed from the inside out, not from the outside in, not different clothes, not a different neighborhood, not new friends, but from the inside out. Where you can see a change in me just by looking in my eyes. Because that's where the soul shows. You know, you get a newcomer in here, they're around, you see them, and then one day you sit next to them going, oh my God, you're here. When did you get here? They've been coming all along, but suddenly there's something. It's the light. It's the spirit has awakened. Oh my God, you're here. Welcome. My fifth step. I'll tell you, every time I do a fifth step, I'm not too thrilled about doing it. Because I know my sponsor's going to hear it. If there's a name for it, it's been done. I've been told that a million times, but it's still now it's my stuff. And it may be Mickey Mouse stuff. It might be uncomfortable stuff, but I need to share it. And I get uncomfortable. I always wish my sponsor would call in sick on the fifth step appointment. You know, but I pray and I go. One of my sponsors, Mark, when he was alive, would sit with us and say, okay, before we get going, tell me the worst thing on that list. Tell me the thing you never want to tell me. It's always sex. And if you're poised, well, I'll go first. And he would share a piece of inventory. He's okay. Now you go. That's okay. Okay, good. We got that out of the way. Now we can start working. It's always the sex stuff. I'm the only person on the planet who thought it or did it. I'm not being an egomaniac, you know. And so off I go and I sit. We usually pray before we begin anything because I'm about to experience God taking me to a place I cannot volunteer to go. Going in to do a fifth step, I cannot volunteer to do that on my best day. But God's going to put a teacher in front of me and move forward. And here's the great thing before I get into reading here about step five. And I want to be careful how I say this. I just need a little latitude here. I'm a Catholic and I go to confession. And I attend Mass. It's a beautiful thing. I sit with someone who's been given the authority, the power, the privilege of hearing that and giving me absolution. Very important in my life. Very sacred to me. It's very safe for me. And a few times the priest would give me some direction. Would talk a little bit. And very often they'd say, sorry for your sins. Give me some penance and go. Sounds beautiful. What we did in AA, because we're alcoholics, we couldn't just say, okay, fifth step, you're done. Have a great life. What we had to do was back it up with some stuff. Because I can leave a confession, be absolutely clean, and go do it again. And then run back and do it again. What we do in AA, we hear it as if you will a priest, because it's a confession, or a rabbi, or whoever. And we're sitting in this mercy seat because we've done the same thing. And we know how nervous and affrighted that new person is, or that old timer sharing the inventory. So we meet it with mercy, with understanding and direction. And we share our own stuff. The priest is not going to say, I did that too. But we will say, I did that too. And I did it better than you, so sit down. Right? We will share back and forth. And the prospector's shoulders drop a little bit. And we take notes as you're sharing. And then what we do when we're done with the fifth step, we say we got something called 6 and 7, which is going to work on defects. My power, my knowledge will not affect my defects at all. Even my willingness to be changed will not affect my defects. But God's power will bring defects to their knees. And so what we have in 6 and 7 is kind of a backup in order to continue this change. So the behavior changes. So the person going to make step 9, like me, is not the person that showed up in step 1, 2, 3, and 4, even 5. And then what we do is we continue this process to change and awaken the spirit by doing step 9, which really trims down the tree. And we become warriors, messengers for God, because we're about to enter the world of the spirit. It's a complete oval. So that's what we kind of do. We kind of back this stuff up by a change in behavior, a change in attitude and outlook upon life, and a deeper relationship, a more cemented or oneness, a relationship with God. It's incredible what AA, what we get to do in here. And I'm going to settle for, I'm going to go to a meeting and then go home. So my book says, having made our personal inventory step 4, what shall we do about it? We've been trying to get a new attitude and a new relationship with our Creator. A new attitude, one that's unblocked, more open-minded perhaps. Maybe I had some contempt, suspicion, and doubt about this God. I'm going to have a new attitude towards it. Kind of like, I don't like the gym, I don't want to go to the gym, it's too much work. And then one day, I want to get in shape, and I'm going to go to the gym. I have a better attitude, and it comes to fruition. A different viewpoint, different point of view on this. And a new relationship. So I might know about God, I might know about Scripture, might know about my religion, I might even believe in God, but we're going to get something new. And not to regain my relationship with God, but have a more oneness with God. God's not going to love me. I think I said this last week. If I change, God loves me enough so that I change. And it's backed up by the warriors he puts in our lives to say, let me hear your inventory. I'll share with you what I've done, and you'll walk on the same road. And you'll find, as Bill said, your utopia somewhere. And that's different for everyone. I mean, I often joke, how many Saturday nights my utopia was I'm in my home, no one's looking for me, I owe nothing to anyone, I'm in a relationship that I adore, I had a meal in my belly, I'm sober, I'm folding laundry. I'm going to watch a movie and get into my bed with someone I adore with clean sheets. And if God wakes me up, I'm going to wake up to the same person with a new outlook on life. I'll fold laundry all night long. That's my little utopia. Sometimes my utopia is on a Sunday, maybe around 6 o'clock, just going for a walk on the beach. Sometimes it's even talking about going down to the beach, that I have the opportunity to walk out of my door and I can go down to the beach and go for a walk and not get shot, not get high, not get arrested, not steal. I can go for a walk. I can even consider that thought. How free is free? I've admitted certain defects. I've ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is, and I put my finger on the weak items in my personal inventory. About this inventory, I've written lots of inventory. I do nightly reviews. This is how I've been brought up in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I remember many years ago, I was sitting with Mark H., who was my sponsor at the time, and I had gone through the work 3 times in 1 year, and I called him up, said, I'm ready to go through the work again. And he stopped me. He says, who are you worshiping, the work or God? So a big book says, a business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Because sour milk is in on the shelf and stuff that's past the due date is still on the shelf. No one's going to buy in that place where the food is soiled. They'll go out of business. So you need to take inventory, take stock, get rid of the bad, and keep up the good. Or put new stuff in. But if the store is constantly closed and taking inventory, they will also go broke because they're never open for business. So I can get into worshiping the methodology, writing inventory, and have no time to be open to serve another drunk. And I will go broke just as fast. So about doing the inventory, getting in the saddle and ride. Okay, got a few more minutes here. It says this requires action on my part, and these weak items are about to be cast out. Now, cast out. If I went to my therapist when I was in therapy, or I went to my clinician or whatever, a drug counselor while I'm in treatment, and I says to him or her, here's weak items in my personal inventory. I have an hour. Cast them out. I have a good insurance policy. Cast them out. I'm here 90 days and in this treatment center, and you have not cast them out yet. In fact, they seem to have brought in friends. Listen, I'm in the business, so I can say this. I should say this. There are people in that business who give their blood to help people. Are there holes in it? Yeah. I like to punch holes in it, too, because we could do a better job in that business. I sit with a sponsor. Admit to a God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of my wrongs. Admitting to God, a little uncomfortable, but I need to do that, and I write. I'm still in this solitary self-appraisal. Admitting to myself, my ego can be all over that. I'm still in solitary self-appraisal. It's me and God, and I'm writing. No one's seen it yet. Now to another human being. Now the ego gets crushed. That's what's uncomfortable. But it's the freeing of us. It's the awakening of the spirit. And it's unbelievable how we can sit with the drunk or drunks and share this stuff with God overseeing the whole thing. And our book says they're about to be cast out. Those of us who have been here a while, and maybe some of us who were here last time, who have submitted to this work, who really been in the middle of these 12 steps and living in all three sides of the triangle, I know you can bear witness that stuff that we came in with has gone. Doesn't mean it won't return because we're not cured. But the person who walked in the door, the more we acknowledged and shared, it dies in the light. We're not the same people anymore. Sure, we got cracks in the arm, we got our stuff. But that person does not exist anymore. They've been cast out. The things I was drawn to, attracted to, tempted by, thought about, is not part of my life anymore, a day at a time. Which is miraculous for a guy like me, whose self was self-centered, self-seeking, self-absorbed. It's always about me. Even when I'm trying to be kind, it's about me. So what we do is we pray, we read some stuff out of the big book, and we're about to go on this mission. Not that kind of mission, guys in the back. That's not what I'm talking about. The spiritual mission. And what all my teachers would do, as my current one, is listen very closely, not only to what I'm saying, but to what I'm not saying, as I've done with the men I sponsor. And we usually have a notepad and pen in front of us, and sometimes we'll be moved to take notes. Big Book says this is a life and death errand. Think about that. Life and death errand. God has given us that chore, that responsibility. I need to treat it that way with some dignity. I'm not going to be driving in my car and you're sitting next to me reading to do a fifth step. I need to get a place that's quiet. And they talk and I take notes. They talk and I take notes. I ask them to stick to the script because I have to assume God gave you that. And the ego wants to get in there and kind of massage it a little bit, move things around. And I tell them, please don't do that, but they always do. We get back to the script. Don't go off book. Stay with the book. Stay with the book. Stay with the notes. I'll stop them once in a while, as my sponsor does with me, and we're navigating through this. And here's what goes on when we do these notes. Joe's on page 20 of his fourth step, perhaps. And and I'm going, how much more of this do I have to endure? And I'll stop and I'll say, hold on a second. You know, back on page 3, you had the same stuff going on. And you were 10. You're 40. And you're doing the same exact thing, the same outlook on life, the same perception, the same mentality. You're 40 years old living in a 10-year-old. Do you see this? It's here. Look, it's all here. They have the aha moment. Oh my God. It doesn't feel good, but they get to see themselves. It becomes three-dimensional. It gets kind of lit up. This is me. Different place, different people, different scenarios, but it's me navigating the same way I always did. All about me. Stepping on the toes of my fellows, they retaliate, and I want to retaliate back. And nowhere in there is any kind of dependence upon God. How could I be dependent upon God if I have no God in my life? I'm dependent upon alcohol. I'm dependent upon drugs. I'm dependent upon my relationship, my money, and fill in the blank. But never God. And what I found out, I was showing dependence upon God, reliance upon God, and beginning the infancy of it, the beginning of a relationship with God by putting pen to paper, finishing step four, and then going to my sponsor and saying, here. That was a whole God trip, and I didn't even see it until I got out on the other side. We live life forward, understand it backwards. If you're doing this work for the first time and it's feeling uncomfortable, but you're doing it, doesn't have to be perfect, but you're doing it, God's got his hands all over you. And you may not even feel godly doing it. It may feel messy and icky and confusing, but the answer is right in there in the mystery. Because once we get to 10, 11, and 12, we'll look back and say, oh my God, God was all over that inventory. God was all over the sharing of it. Oh my God. The aha moment. And sometimes quickly and sometimes slowly, when that moment happens, it's profound, it's life-changing, it's mood-altering, it's transformational, it's revolutionary. We stand in his presence. Oh my God, he had me the whole way. I'm going to hold on to my seat a little bit tighter and go look for another drunk because I want you to have that kind of experience, man, because it's a blast. That's all I got. Peace.
All right, let's thank Peter M. Okay. And I want to bring up the secretary. Chris.
Hi, everybody. My name is Chris, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. I'm filling in for Mike this week as secretary. In keeping with our seventh tradition, which states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, our baskets are now going around. We have a guest here all the way from Oregon. Her name is Jessica, and I've asked Jessica to come up here and read the recovered statement. So welcome, Jessica. Thanks so much for being here.
Okay. Hi, I'm Jessica, a recovered alcoholic. We are not cured of alcoholism, recovered but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
Thank you. 1940s big book style sponsorship. From the forward to the second edition of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is from the forward to the second edition. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we have seen, felt, come to believe, and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Could I please have a show of hands in the room of recovered alcoholics? Awesome. That's awesome. Is there anyone in need of a sponsor? If you could please raise your hand. Anybody in need of a sponsor? Awesome, man. If you could stand up for me, please. Awesome. Thank you. Yeah, so if you want to get with these folks that just stood up, recovered members, and let's get these folks back to God. Last meeting, is this the last meeting of the month? I believe it is. Anyone celebrating a year or more? Is anybody in here celebrating a year or more of sobriety in the month of July? Yeah, okay, let's start from the front.
My name is Cameron. I'm an alcoholic. I'll have 10 years sober.
Fantastic. Congratulations, Tamara, celebrating 10 years. And, Alan, you're celebrating in July?
Yeah, Alan, recovered alcoholic 1 year.
Yes, sir.
Carrie, an alcoholic,
4 years.
Fantastic,
Carrie, 4 years. Okay.
Over there.
Okay, sorry, guys. Yes.
Steve, 1 year alcoholic.
Hey. Anybody else celebrating in the month of July? Okay. Congratulations, everybody. Please join us Monday nights for our Big Book study meeting, where the Big Book comes alive. It's in the same building. It's just up on the third floor, but you'll see the sign and everything's going to be the same. So this is Monday. Fellowship starts at 6:30, and the Big Book study starts at 7:15. We have CDs, mugs, large print Big Books, the Little Red Book, and Big Book dictionaries for sale in the back there. And we meet every Thursday, starting promptly at 7:15, and we ask that you please be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. Also, we have some AA announcements. If you're interested in some of the AA events and things, they're up here on the sign. AA's Got Talent, February 3rd. It's like a talent show, people in AA, people in recovery. It's a great opportunity to cut loose a little bit. February 3rd, yeah. Okay, Waves of Serenity. Come help us put on another successful Florida State. So this is the 62nd Florida State Convention. This is a big deal. I know they're looking for people to help with service. So if you're interested in doing service, it takes a small army to put this thing on. So, okay, we got some hot dogs up there. I'm not really sure what that's all about. Yeah, that already happened. I think we're maybe a little bit mixed up with the slides. But we usually have some announcements there on the back table. So we'll have, we'll see you. We'll see you Monday. So thanks. See you next week.
I'm just going to hold it like this. That was great. Right. We have tonight's sessions and all the past speakers' podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night Big Book study, and those who wish to thank tonight's speaker, please line up down the center aisle, and let's close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
I am desperately in need of restoration. Yeah, and I am ready for you to take me higher. Yeah, the only thing that I can do. Accumulation, yeah. possessions that I have amount to nothing at all.
And I hope